And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Candidates for Alaska's U.S. Senate race took part in a question and answer session at the Southeast Conference's annual meeting in Ketchikan this week. Incumbent Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski joined the conference by video from D.C. Republican Kelly Shabaka and Democrat Pat Chesbrough attended in person. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
The Southeast Conference brings together businesses and economic organizations from throughout the region. The U.S. Senate candidates answered questions about issues important to Southeast. The candidates all said the Alaska Marine Highway System was essential. They supported growing technical education programs to develop the state's local workforce, and they thought the Southeast region is a leader in renewable energy for its hydropower. But the candidates had a few different ideas on their approach to helping fisheries and the lack of affordable housing. They were asked how they would help Alaska get its fair share of international fisheries allocations. Kelly Shabaka said she would increase enforcement of federal waters through the U.S. Coast Guard.
I strongly support increasing our Coast Guard aircraft, drones, cutters, and resources in Alaska to enforce our EEZ. I also think we need to invest in enforcement to protect our multi-billion dollar annualized seafood industry.
She also said she'd create a new Fisheries Management Council to manage Alaska waters and the Bering Sea. Pat Chesbrough also saw more oversight as a possible solution.
We can also strengthen our observer programs by having two observers, maybe so that they don't have to stay up 24 hours a day to check on the fish and check on the bycatch.
She said the country also needs to address climate change, which will affect its fisheries. Murkowski said Alaska loses Chinook salmon allocation during every Pacific Salmon Treaty negotiation. She says what she can do as a federal lawmaker is to help with funding.
Make sure that we are sufficiently funding the research. I have been doing that. I've targeted to Alaska. I'm making sure that we are getting the benefit from NOAA survey and research requirements. We need to make sure that every year, whether it is with the Pacific Salmon Treaty, we have funded that to the level that has been requested.
She said Alaska also needs to send its best and brightest negotiators to the table. The candidates were also asked about housing and childcare, which have been identified as critical to Southeast's economy. In a survey this year of over 400 Southeast businesses, most said housing and childcare were their biggest challenges. Chesbrough chose to speak on childcare and said 3- and 4-year-olds could be going to preschool. She said it needs to be an investment priority.
And that means we need to invest not only in the, you know, helping people to afford it, but we need to invest in the people that provide it. We need to have professional childcare workers. We know this is really important.
Chabaka said the state needs to get back millions of acres of land from the federal government to use. She said there needs to be more infrastructure in neighborhoods and slammed the Biden administration's $1 trillion infrastructure bill.
The Biden administration has decided we will get no new roads from the infrastructure bill. That's what happens when we make deals with the Biden administration. We help them, they don't help us.
Chabaka accused the Biden administration several times throughout the Q&A session. Murkowski countered that there is funding for new roads in the federal infrastructure bill and said Chabaka's remarks were wrong.
Absolutely, flat out not true. And she needs to look clearly to that measure that not only builds out the road infrastructure, but also bridges every aspect of really connection.
She said the bill includes $23 million for Sitka alone to increase affordable housing. The Southeast Conference was held September 13th through the 15th in Ketchikan. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
You can find the entire recording of the U.S. Senate Q&A online at ktoo.org. The Constitutional Convention question is coming up on the November ballot. That's Alaskans' once-a-decade opportunity to decide whether to open the state constitution for revisions. Anti-abortion advocates and proponents of a constitutional convention have their eyes on one section of the document in particular, the Privacy Clause, which is the basis for reproductive rights in Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George explains what the Privacy Clause is and what could happen to abortion rights if a convention takes place.
The Privacy Clause of the Alaska State Constitution dates back to the early 1970s. Around that time, concerns about the evolving information age, the use of computers, and the security of individuals' private information were taking root. In 1972, the Alaska legislature drafted a constitutional amendment that explicitly guarantees the right to privacy, and voters overwhelmingly approved it. Over the years, legal decisions have defined what the right to privacy includes in Alaska.
The right to privacy is a steadily evolving one.
That's former Alaska Attorney General Bruce Botello. Broadly, the Privacy Clause protects the right to shield personal information as well as the right to personal autonomy.
It's decided in part by cases that are real controversies, and those controversies illuminate what the contours of that right to privacy is.
And it's led to some important changes in Alaska law. It supports marijuana possession rights in our state, and it's also the basis for Alaskans' reproductive rights. Abortion has been a legal medical procedure in Alaska since 1970, before Roe v. Wade. But the law included a provision that no hospital or person was required to participate in providing an abortion. In 1997, that was challenged when a group of pro-choice advocates sued a hospital in Palmer that had banned abortions. The case reached the Alaska Supreme Court, where justices ruled that the Constitution's privacy clause protects individuals' rights to abortion.
I mean, there's some great language in the case about what could be more private and more personal than the right to decide what to do with your own body.
That's Susan Orlansky, cooperative counsel for the Alaska ACLU. Orlansky says in the years since the Palmer Hospital decision, other rulings have referenced the privacy clause to enumerate the scope of abortion rights. For example, in 2019, the Alaska Supreme Court rejected laws that restricted access to abortion for people on Medicaid. About a dozen U.S. states have similar privacy clauses in their state constitutions, and a few, including Florida, Montana, and Minnesota, view abortion as legal under the right to privacy. If a constitutional convention happens in Alaska, Orlansky says there are a number of ways an abortion ban might be written into the law.
You could rewrite the privacy clause exactly the way it is now with a comma, except that this doesn't apply to abortion. Or you could write in Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, this Constitution applies to everyone, and by everyone we include life from the moment of conception. That would be a really easy way to do it.
In any case, delegates would have to approve the new language, and then Alaska voters would need to vote to accept the revised Constitution after the convention. Botello says that might not be easy to achieve.
The bar is high, and to be honest, not simply with this issue, but I think, let's say, generally, one should want a high bar before changing the fundamental law of the state.
In a state that has historically supported access to abortion, Botello says any constitutional abortion bans would likely be difficult to pass. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
And a significant fall storm approaches western Alaska. The Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management is asking residents to prepare as best they can to provide life and to protect life and property. Ed Plum, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service office in Fairbanks, says what's left of Typhoon Mirbok is on a textbook track to the Bering Strait.
The remnants of that are going to move up into the Bering Sea Thursday and then move northeast and track towards the Bering Strait and then into the Chukchi Sea through Saturday.
Since the storm is estimated to bring high winds and coastal flooding later today, DHSEM is urging communities and residents to make last-minute preparations now. Claude Denver, the response manager for the State Operations Emergency Center, says Western Alaskans should secure large equipment or loose materials, stock up on drinking water, and check on their neighbors in need.
We expect that there may be up to 90-mile-an-hour gusts, the same kind of weather conditions that would complicate flying, would complicate any kind of aerial delivery of materials or response. So that's something to keep in mind for most communities, that while the storm's going on, you have to kind of employ your local emergency plans and preparation to kind of get through the first 48, 72 hours of the event.
The strongest wind gusts are expected later tonight, along with rapidly increasing storm surge throughout the night. This applies to communities along the Yukon Delta Coast, the Norton Sound, and throughout the Bering Strait. According to the National Weather Service, the peak storm surge could rival the Bering Sea Superstorm from November 2011. But without any sea ice to buffer coastal communities this time around, it could cause severe coastal flooding. You're listening to KTOO. Right now, it's 57 degrees and sunny. Tomorrow is expected to be a little bit foggy in the morning and then sunny all day with a high of 57 degrees and a low of 45 degrees. This weekend, there's some scattered showers expected on Saturday and possibly on Sunday. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumrie.